Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio. I'm Tim Grady, and I am here with Lou Weiss, who is president of All Metals and Forge Group. It's a manufacturer of open die forgings and seamless roll rings and gear blanks like the gears behind us. So if you need some of that for some industrial applications, check them out at steelforge.com. Joining us is Brandon Aker. Brandon, you are president of Titan Abrasives. This is going to be a fun discussion because we're going to learn what you can do with abrasives, who is using abrasives that we may not know uses abrasives, and what abrasives are. So, Brandon, thanks for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, let's start with the basics. Abrasives, that's a lot of stuff. What's included in this pool of possible abrasives?
Yeah, the abrasive category is pretty large. Used to be a smaller, people used to call it, refer to it as sandblasting, but that's changed over the years. And it seems like they constantly coming up with new abrasives to use. Some common ones are, people are probably familiar with, would be aluminum oxide. Aluminum oxide is an abrasive that's found on sandpaper. Same material on sandpaper, and it's classified the same way. When we use it, it's just loose, like sand would be, but comes in sizes just like sandpaper. If you had a, 20 grit sandpaper, it would be really coarse and rough. 400 grit, really fine. Same thing with medias; they kind of fall in those same categories. There's steel grit, steel shot. Difference between grit and shot: grit is angular, shot is round. They kind of do a different purpose. One profiles, one kind of peens. There's glass. Glass comes in two categories: glass bead, round or crushed glass, angular. Plastic bead. Then there's a lot of organics: walnut shells, corn cob, baking soda. Yeah, it's quite a list.
So what I have to ask, if it grinds, it grinds. Why do you have to have all these different mediums?
For different materials, depending on what you're blasting and what result you want to get from them. Some do grind, like your aluminum oxide, steel grit, garnet are going to grind and give you that profile. Some just clean, like plastic media, which are like little plastic beads, does not grind. It does not profile. It just cleans. It's actually very soft.
Got it.
Same with some of the organics, baking soda, walnut shells are not really hard. They're better for cleaning things that you don't want to do, abrade them or do much damage to.
And what is the shift away from sandblasting? Why is sand not used as an abrasive anymore?
Sand, because of the silica that's in sand, that's okay when it's a grain of sand, like on the beach, it's okay. But once it's blasted or cut and it goes into a dust form and becomes a free silica that's inhaled, it can become, hazardous and create, a disease called silicosis in your lungs. So not good, not something you want to be breathing. It became a big deal years ago because people like anything, we're blasting with no operator safety equipment, no helmet, no respirators, just open blasting. And that's what created all the problems. Now it's pretty much frowned upon to use sand. But the effects of any of the medias in the dust are kind of contained now because operator safety equipment, people have helmet, air fed helmets, they're pretty much suited up and protected from that now.
So the other mediums, whether it's crushed glass or crushed coal, aren't those also dangerous to inhale?
Yes, all things that you do not really want to be inhaling. Not as dangerous like the silica that they were going to, give you a disease. But yes, you're correct. You don't want to be breathing in any sorts of dust, which is why it's key to have that respirator on, that air-fed helmet, and the proper safety equipment is key when you're blasting.
What I thought was interesting, you and I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago, that, and I guess that most manufacturers know about this, but the general consumer may not, that almost everything made, manufactured, has to have some kind of finish done to it.
Yes.
So it's not spoken about a lot. It's like a big secret. Don't tell anybody we're doing this. But everything has to have some kind of an abrasive finish done to it.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Pretty much everything, it gets coated, has some sort of finish that helps that coating to adhere to it. And it's the thing that isn't talked about and usually isn't known. And it's almost like it doesn't exist. People see the coating, they see the paint, like, oh, that paint looks great. But no one sees the behind the scenes of like what's done to get that coating to adhere. You would know if it wasn't properly done, that preparation of the steel or the surface wasn't done, because the coating would fail. Then you'd have a problem. Then people would say, hey, the paint failed, it's chipping off. Then people notice, but they don't realize why that's happening and what goes on to make that not happen is all that surface preparation.
Sounds like you need to have a conversation with Airbus and either it's the United Arab Emirates or Saudi Arabia that has 300 planes sitting on the ground where the paint is peeling off the plane.
Yeah. Yep. They need to blast those aircraft and recoat them for sure.
So what kinds of applications are we using abrasives for? What are we trying to achieve? You know, for instance, the thing that pops into my head are my lawn chairs. You know, they're powder coated. Yep. But are they actually abrasively blasted before they're powder coated?
Yes. Yep. Lawn furniture is actually, porch furniture, patio furniture is actually a big one that gets blasted. A lot of job shops do that have blast booths, do a lot of work with patio furniture, wrought iron furniture, fencing. It is a big one. Like you mentioned, the airplanes, aircraft is a big one, becoming really big now because of the whole airline industry saving money and the whole COVID that grounded a lot of aircraft for many years. Now they've been sitting on the ground, getting corroded, paint failure. So now it's trying to put them back into service, which becomes a big maintenance operation, and blasting becomes a big part of that. Pretty much anything steel that has some sort of coating to it, is abrasive, is blasted. There are other things that you probably wouldn't think of. Sometimes like log homes, people that are cleaning up homes or wood, sometimes blast them as well with your softer medias, usually like a walnut shell, which is just what it is, crushed up walnut shells or corn cobs. Baking soda is a unique one. Baking soda and organic is used sometimes to remove graffiti off of, you know, bridges or concrete in the city. You can blast that graffiti off. And because it's baking soda, people don't mind because it's the dust it's creating. It's just baking soda. It's kind of harmless, so they can just wash it away. Baking soda is also a good one to blast homes. If there's been any fire damage, you can blast the damage, the smoke, the burnt off of the wood without damaging the wood. And being baking soda, it also deodorizes it, so it helps get rid of that smoke smell, which is a kind of an unusual one. Another interesting one is, I don't know if they still exist. There were like jeans, denim jeans. They used to have sandblasted jeans that gave them like a worn look. And that was big. And they were actually sandblasted. And that was, that got a lot of bad publicity because they were actually sandblasting. And of course they, saving money, sent it to foreign countries and had people blasting without operator safety equipment, open sandblasting jeans, and people got really sick from all that silicosis. But they were blasting denim to make them look worn and softer and what the consumer.
Wow. There was one particular product that you and I spoke about, which I'm still finding it a bit shocking. And so I'm just going to say the word. Hypodermic needles.
Yeah. Yep. Another thing, you wouldn't think that abrasive blasting would be involved in hypodermic needles. But yes, when the needles are cut, they can sometimes have a little tiny, almost microscopic burrs on them, which obviously you don't want before that goes into the skin. So they are blasted with a very, very fine grit abrasive. It's almost like a powder. and they just quickly blast the end of it to clean that off and smooth them. Just interesting. Usually all automated equipment's doing that because they're just the sheer numbers of them, the volumes, thousands and thousands of these little tiny needles passing through a machine, and it just quickly blasts the ends of them.
And I guess they don't use sand with silica in a hypodermic. No. But yeah, we're getting it. We're understanding it.
Yeah, Brandon, experts at the end of this.
You've got a video or two, and maybe you can talk over the video while it's playing and explain to us lay folk what is happening in this operation.
Okay. Yes, I will. Let's see if I can get a screen share here. Are you able to see that?
Yes, we can.
Oh, excellent. So this is going to be, this is an installation of a blast room, a large blast room, our control panel there that controls the room. You see the big enclosure, look very similar to a paint booth. Then you have big hoppers here that hold the media, the big black hoppers feeding the blast machines underneath. Around the back of the room is a big silver, the big silver box would be a dust collector, your dust collection system that's ducted to the back of the room, sucking air in the front of the room, giving it a nice cross throwing out the back. You have your blower there. Dust collectors are helping clean out the media as well as clean all that air so the operator can see inside the room. Large, tall thing there, that's a bucket elevator connected to a screw or an auger that's in the floor of the room that you would push the abrasive into that auger, which comes back and feeds that bucket elevator, which takes it up to the top, cleans it, dumps it in that large hopper, which then feeds these two machines, which are your blast machines, your sandblast machines, that then have hoses that feed into the room. I'll see if I have... there's another, have another walk around of a similar room. This one does have an auger, large room, big inlets on the front. You have your air inlets that will suck air in, lights in the side, lights in the ceiling of the rooms as well. That's inside the room, usually a steel floor in there. There's another bucket elevator feeds. It's just a single operator room, this one was, that has a single blast machine in there. Sometimes you can have multiples if you have one larger rooms with multiple people in there. Again, dust collection system feeding into the back of the room. There's that big bucket elevator again. At the top of the bucket elevator, you have what we call an air wash separator, which cleans the media as it falls through it, and then it returns it back to that blast machine. Some operator safety equipment. That's your filter for the air filter. Gas monitor, monitors for carbon monoxide for the operator, that for the air in his helmet. Airlines running in, feeding that machine. It's all reused. So that elevator's picking the media up, cleaning it, returning it back to that blast machine, and then going in the room. So it's kind of a closed, like a loop that you're constantly reusing that media. And that's really where people start to save their money, is reusing their media over and over again. Cleaning it saves disposal cost as well. You don't have a lot of dust and debris to get rid of because you're reusing that media over and over again.
Well, cost not being a small number, this looks like a very expensive process to install in a manufacturing plant.
They are a fairly expensive piece of equipment. They're large. They take up a decent amount of space in a plant. They usually have to be, errors considered with the duct work. Sometimes dust collectors are put outside. Sometimes they're put in the plant. Media, it's an investment. The media is an investment to purchase all the media, and then to operate it, have your guys operating it, maintaining it. But it is a key process of that fabrication. Some of those, I think that larger room was for a company that manufactures large transformers, power transformers. for the power industry. So it's a critical component and a critical aspect of that fabrication, that manufacturing process.
Okay.
Now I have, if you want to see another video, here's a, this is a blast cabinet, which we talked about the blast room. All run very similar. This is the inside. The blast cabinets are just like a blast room, function the same, but it's a smaller, it's like a small blast room, and you stand on the outside and put your hands in those gloves to operate them. So it doesn't require the same operator safety equipment because everything's contained in that cabinet. You have doors on the side that you would open to put product inside, usually smaller parts. So basically doing the same thing as a blast room, just smaller components go into a blast cabinet. When they're larger, then they would go into, you know, a room, and that room size changes depending upon what people, what the part is that they want to do. You have your gloves inside, hose in there. The guy typically holds the part in a hand, other hand has the blast hose, and it's controlled by a foot pedal. Step on the foot pedal to start blast operation. Maintains everything, keeps all the dust in that room. There's a dust collection system that's connected to that, just like in the same components, just like a blast room. You have your blast machine, you have a recovery system to recover the media, as well as a dust collection system.
Yeah, it's quite an in-depth, complex methodology. Yes. How long does it to put something in that little box room? And you're going to blast something. How long does it take to do a blast, typically?
Depending on the part and what you're removing from it, if it's just a newly fabricated component, it's pretty quick. Can be a few seconds to a minute. Larger components, if you're doing, in a blast room, a vehicle, the military does a lot of vehicles. Tanks and anything, wheeled vehicles, trucks, if they're pulling those in, that can take a little longer, depending on the people. Sometimes there's two guys in there that can blast each side. So it could be a couple of hours to do a big vehicle. Parts, smaller parts, quicker, but you're doing them much faster than other means, rather than using a grinder or hand sanding something, using air blast is a much quicker operation.
So is this equipment likely to be able to use robotics, where you have a robot, put something in the box, close the door, turn on the on switch, come back 20 minutes later, change it out, and go all through the night?
There can be robotics. Some of the cabinets are set up more with fixed guns in there. For processes, it all depends on that component. Like any robotics, get tricky when it's the components changing. It's easy when you have to program that robot what to blast. So if you're changing different components all the time, it gets really difficult to train it to do different types of blasting. If it's the same kind of part going through, sometimes it's more of a conveyor system that it goes in one side of the cabinet. You have several fixed guns in that cabinet that are blasting both sides, and it goes in and then out the other side. One example would be like propane tanks. Like on a grill, those propane tanks are actually blasted and coated, and they do it often because they recycle them and reuse those tanks, and it can be thousands of them that have to get blasted, which would take longer if a person was doing it by hand. So then you build a obviously much more expensive machine cabinet that would be automated that would feed those tanks in. Sometimes they spin and roll in there while fixed guns are blasting them, so you can get them done much quicker with robotics or automation. Depends on the volume of things that you're dealing with. Obviously, automation gets more expensive.
Who would have thunk that this is such a complex process?
And then with blasting is very unique to other industries, and in that especially with robotics on a blast room, if you were to put a robot in there, different than other industries is that abrasive. So the abrasive flying around can also damage the robot that's in there. So everything has to be protected, rubber lining and boots on all the fittings so that the robot itself doesn't get damaged, isn't damaging itself while it's blasting.
Right. Amazing.
So, I'm curious if they use anything other than air as a propellant?
There are other machines. Sometimes they are big wheel machines. We don't make them. We're an air blast manufacturer. So that's our world. Everything is, the media is propelled by air. But they do make, other shot blasting equipment or wheel blasting equipment that are basically like big wheels that are basically throwing, grabbing that media and throwing it at the surface, at a high speed. So yes, it can be done that way as well.
Well, I'm glad you pointed out the hazards of blasting, because I was always of the mind in my wood shop, I needed some kind of a little blasting instrument to add some texture to wood. You blow away the soft part and leave the heavy grain. But of course, I've been foolish enough to just have at it, no protective equipment. So I'm glad I learned that today.
And then get an asthma attack.
Yes. Worse than that, I get woodosis or something.
You deal all over the country?
All over the country and all over the world.
Really?
We will ship our equipment anywhere in the world. Believe it or not, those big blast rooms do travel, usually get packed into pieces and go into shipping containers. We do a lot with the military, and military obviously bases all over the world that we support. So sometimes we do have to pack our equipment into containers and ship it all over the world.
Where's your main point of manufacture?
Pennsylvania. On the east. We're a suburb of Philadelphia, Bucks County.
Ivyland.
Ivyland, correct.
So yep. I'm sure they got our audience got your information, but why don't you give it to us again for those who missed your address and website and so on?
Yes, we're in Ivyland, Pennsylvania. You can find us. We're Titan Abrasive, and you can just find us on the web at titanabrasive.com. If you go on there, all our contact information's on there too: emails, phone number, hours. Everything's on our website.
One last point for me. Are there such things as customized versions of a blast system that a client might request? And I can't even come up with what that would be, but is there flexibility in the customization?
Yes. Yes, there is flexibility. And we do a lot of customization depending on the customer and their product. Whether the room, it's just a blast room, what kind of component they want to fit in there. If they want to have access for overhead cranes, we have to put like crane slots in the roof that open up that an overhead crane can bring parts into. Blast cabinets. Our new blast cabinet that we designed has removable doors on the side that lift off, so we can put different style doors on there. Sometimes people want a small hole in the door that they can put like a piece of pipe in there. If something's long and they just, it's a 10-foot pipe, but they only have to blast a few inches of the end, we can make a custom door that would have an insert that you can just stick that long pipe in there and just blast the end rather than have to buy a big blast room to fit the entire pipe inside if you're just going to blast that end. So yeah, there's quite a bit of customizations.
Yeah, that's like sandblasting a hypodermic needle.
Yes. Yep.
This is an unusual application, Brandon. We appreciate you sharing with our audience what takes place with abrasive blasting and the types of things that it's applied to that we wouldn't normally think of. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, well, great. Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for being here. Educational, and I hope everybody took the information and reaches out to you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me be precise about TitanAbrasive.com. Is it abrasive singular or abrasives plural?
Ah, good point. It is singular because we are manufacturing the equipment. So we're Titan Abrasive. Abrasives with the S is more referring to the material. The media would be your abrasive. So yes, we are singular. We're just TitanAbrasive.com.
You know about Oxford commas?
I have to be an English major, so I'm always checking the details to make sure I have it right. Yeah. Brandon, thanks again for joining us.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Have a great day.
You as well.
And for those of you, while you are surfing to titanabrasive.com, also stop by jacketmediaco.com, where you can find this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio and all of the other podcasts we produce. And thank you for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.